We have approval of the minutes for March 24th. Representative McNamara, move the minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd move the minute.
Move approval of March 24th minutes. Any corrections or additions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. Good morning, members.
Good morning.
Too much paper this morning, right?
Last morning.
The first bill we're going to hear is going to be 2602. It's Representative Cox's bill. It was sent to us by the Policy Committee. Had a full hearing there. Representative Cox, we appreciate you being here this morning, and we're going to be moving your bill, I believe, to a Rules Committee, and would like to have you just briefly explain the bill, and then we'll see if any public testimony. Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 2602 before you was in, as the Chair explained, was in the Environment Policy Committee, and the bill was amended quite a bit based on a letter from the auto manufacturers indicating that they would like to participate in developing a memo of understanding with the State of Minnesota, the Office of Environmental Assistance, on an alternative measure to address the mercury switch collection. So with that in mind, the bill was amended to the form before you. It's fairly simple right now. It just makes it recyclers must remove mercury switches from automobiles or vehicles before they're crushed, processed, and recycled. Fairly simple on that. I do have an amendment when you would care to take that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, I'll move House File 2602 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Rules Committee, and also move the Amendment H2602A3. Representative Cox.
Thank you. And members, Mr. Chair, and members, this amendment essentially just puts back in a little reporting provision that we would ask the Office of Environmental Assistance to report back to the chairs of Environment, Finance, and Policy Committees about the collection rates that for retrieving the mercury switches in 2005 and 2006, a two-year period. And they would present it to you and at least keep us informed as to what the collection rates are. It does not set specific goals on this, but we can deal with that when they bring that information back to us.
Okay. Are there any questions on the amendment? On the amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended. Representative Cox.
Thank you. I would also like to call Peter Larson up. If you can just outline a couple things, if that would be all right, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. We appreciate the work that the committees have done on this, and we're in some small measure pleased that there is some progress that will be made as a result of these discussions. We didn't have an opportunity when we were in the policy committee to see the complete offer from the Auto Alliance, and we just wanted to note a couple things that we hope you'll keep track of as the process goes along. There's a commitment for up to $50,000 in the letter, attached to the letter, which we didn't have before, some working figures that the Alliance provided that indicate to us that while they're confusing to us, the working figures actually talk about costs of $43,000 and $31,000 in years one and two for a total of $74,000. And while these are labeled working figures, we're not quite sure, based on last committee and now seeing this, what the actual commitment is that we're going to be looking forward to from the Auto Alliance. Second, we just wanted to point out that really the Partnership for Mercury-Free Vehicles goal was 90% collection of these switches. We know of one place in the country where this type of offer was really not reduced to writing, but there were some materials provided to auto recyclers to help them understand what they should do, and that was a Buffalo, New York program. That program in the 5 years up to 2002 collected about 10,000 switches. in Ramsey County in 6 months in a program that was similar to Representative Cox's original bill. In 6 months, 8,700 switches were collected. We're not here to predict the future, but we don't have any information that an offer like the Ottos are putting on the table is likely to produce the 90% or even close to that collection that we think is an appropriate goal. And we're happy that there's a report coming back to you. We obviously are going to be watching that, and we hope you will too, because we've heard a lot about sharing the goal of collecting these, and we'd like to have some parameters that clearly show us whether this offer successfully has resulted in high levels of collection.
Okay. Questions from members? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, I also want to bring to your attention that I've had conversations with the manufacturers, auto manufacturers, on the issue, as has Representative Hackbarth, and it's our understanding that they're working with the OEA and ready to work with the OEA right now to put together a memorandum of understanding and get that completed. We're hoping that that can be done within the next 2 to 3 weeks so that we, instead of having legislation in there that kind of set the parameters of what the memorandum of understanding should say, we would like to see that actually completed. So that's kind of message to OEA, and is that it's our request that they work with the manufacturers and get the memorandum of understanding completed as soon as possible, because that way we can get these, have a process for collecting these switches from the salvage yards and have proper disposal of them and relieve the salvage yards of that current cost. And so it, that's our strongest encouragement in that area. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you are working for a report, it seems to me that just a collection rate does not provide us with quite sufficient information to make a judgment. We have to know essentially what it costs to take these things out, because when it seemed to me that the whole debate in this committee was over labor costs, that the auto manufacturers didn't want to pay the labor costs, and the people who that are small businesses who take the switches out didn't feel that they should have been the ones to pay for the labor costs of taking the switches out. So lots of people know about what needs to be done and how it needs to be done, but we haven't figured out who should pay for the labor costs of actually taking it out. So it would be hard for me to make a judgment on what we ought to do in the future if we don't know the labor cost of taking each of these switches out. And I think that's the basic argument here. Representative Cox, would you agree that that's the basic argument, or the basic stumbling block, I guess I would say, is or challenge, is who pays the labor cost of taking the switches out?
I think you've summarized it well. That is a challenge on here, and I think there are probably different options that are looked at to do this, Representative Wagenius. I think the method that we have now, the amendment that I brought forward here, I didn't go into extreme detail of asking the OEA to report information like that. I am very conscious and concerned about asking OEA to do other things that are not funded in this. And I think that if we get into a very in-depth discussion on some of those issues, that we might be heading down that path. I think what I'm trying to do is the agreement that Chairman Osment referred to with the auto manufacturers, Auto Alliance, and the OEA. I'm expecting that it's not going to be heavy on the OEA involvement, and that we're going to be seeing the Auto Alliance work with this program and develop it. And as that moves forward, we might get information that you've identified.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, Mr. Chairman, then, as you are negotiating with the Auto Alliance, and if Representative Cox is right, and we're not asking the OEA to do much here, it still seems to me that the issue comes down to who pays for the cost of taking the switches out, or, and in order to even understand who should do that, we just need to know how much it costs to take each switch out. And then we can say, well, is it fair that the small businesses who do the getting cars ready to be shredded and doing the recycling, is it they who should absorb the cost, or is it the manufacturer who should absorb the cost? Because I think we've taken the taxpayer off the table in this, and I agree that that's appropriate. So, for us to really know anything in 2 years, just knowing the collection rate, I don't think gets us to the point that we can say things are going well.
And Representative Genius, I understand your concern there, but I know that when we've dealt with these issues before, in the form of requiring proper disposal of antifreeze, for example, or requiring proper disposal, removal and disposal of the oil products that are in the automobiles, we haven't really focused on the labor costs in those situations. What we really have focused on is how we're going to handle those materials and how we can best assist in making the disposal easy and affordable for the people that are required to handle them in a safe way. And so I think this kind of falls in that same category, is that this is something that's in the vehicle. As they are recycling it, be removing that, if we can get the costs taken care of with regard to disposal, that would be a significant burden, I believe, off of the small businesses that will be dealing with this, because right now they're collecting what is essentially a hazardous material and have to dispose of it on their own. We're saying that we really need to get that portion covered. And so that's kind of where we're at, is dealing with this like we have other hazardous materials that are in vehicles as they are being recycled. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. One, a logistic one. We've asked the manufacturers to step forward with a memorandum. Do you anticipate that we would see the memorandum before this issue got on the floor, so if the memorandum didn't show up, we could retrieve some of the language that we've deleted?
We will have components of this in the, it's my hope we'll have components of this in the larger omnibus bill also, so we will be able to deal with this issue in the future during the session if we would like to.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And then just a question for Representative Cox. There's been some discussion. Aren't the recyclers currently being paid by North Star Steel for the switches that are brought to them? It's not as much as originally we talked about, but they are being paid for those switches. Is that correct? And they are then not having to deal with the hazardous waste. We've got a private enterprise located here in Minnesota that stepped forward voluntarily to pay a bounty and to take care of the recycling of that. And isn't it their commitment to us to continue on with that, and the manufacturers getting involved would only broaden that program?
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, that's right. You referred to North Star Steel, and I've had good talks with them, and I think they've been a very responsible business here in Minnesota, and they are paying, I believe it's roughly $40 a pound for the mercury that is brought to them in the form of these switches. I have letters from them indicating that it's their intention to continue that program, and then they also have been paying for disposal of that mercury. And that's the kind of thing that I think Representative Osment is referring to, that with that cooperation and with the Auto Alliance cooperation on these other issues related to that, maybe lifting or shifting some of those costs from North Star to the Alliance, for example, the processing and so forth, that somewhere in all that we may be able to get this moving forward and get the mercury out of the vehicles before they're processed without having to have the whole in-depth bill that I initially introduced. I think by having the reporting, then if we see what kind of collection rates that OEA can report back to us, we'll find out if that is working. If it isn't, I'm assuming we'll all be visiting on this some more.
And just a real quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. We are going to enact that it's going to be against the law to not take these switches out, right? It's going to be currently you can dispose of the car with the switch in it and you're not breaking the law. We are now enacting in law that the switches are going to need to be taken out, correct?
That is correct, Representative McNamara. The we've switched from a good faith effort, I guess I would call it, to in the statute that you must remove it in. And I believe, as Representative Osmond explained, it'll go up and it may get a little tweaking as it moves into another committee for to make sure there aren't some inadvertent violations, cars that are smashed up so that you can't get them out or something like that. We want to be careful we don't come down on people that are trying to do the right thing, but it's impossible to do.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I don't know a lot about the economics of stripping cars and so forth, but it just seems to me $40 a pound seems to me that it must be getting very close to economic to take the switches out and recycle them. It takes an awful lot of mercury to make $40 a pound, to make a pound. Yeah, does anyone know how many switches to get a pound of mercury? You know, I'm old enough, probably some of you other guys. Don't you remember you used to play with little balls of mercury in chemistry class? It was. So.
Explains a lot for our generation.
I know. The next generation of legislators who didn't play with balls of mercury is going to be much, much more reasonable to deal with.
Mr. Chair.
But I'm the only one who had a standardized testing system.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, it's been explained to me that that translates into about 25 cents a switch, that Northstar's payment. And then it may they may be absorbing another 20 cents in processing it once they send the switches they collect off for processing.
Any further questions on House File 2602? Any further testimony for or against? Okay, the motion refers on House File 2602 be recommended to pass be referred to Rules Committee as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is passed.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Representative Cox. Members, I'd like to open it up for public testimony at this point. And so you have an idea as to what I'm kind of expecting us to be able to do. I'd like to listen to public testimony and then, depending upon how long that takes, I'm anticipating that we'll probably take about a 15-minute break and then we'll come back and work on the bill after that. So if there's public testimony, who would like to testify? Let's see, have first Mr. Steve Sullivan, the Dakota County Park Director. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Steve Sullivan. I'm the Director of Parks in Dakota County. I'm here on behalf of the Regional Park Implementing Agencies, testifying on behalf of the cut to the O&M funding. I think Regional Park Implementing Agencies realize there's a need to shoulder a portion of the solution during these difficult fiscal times. What we're asking today is for you to reconsider the $240,000 cut to O&M, to Regional Park O&M, and to consider the governor's recommendation cut of 3% or $99,000. While the 10 implementing agencies use these funds differently and similar to Dakota County, I'd like to tell you how Dakota County uses these O&M funds. Dakota County Regional Parks, excuse me, offers 5 miles of Mississippi River in Spring Lake Park Reserve, the Cannon River, Trout Brook, and Minnesota's southernmost native white pine woods in Meesville Ravine, and a tamarack bog in Lake in Lebanon Hills Regional Park. Dakota County's predominant use of the state funds for O&M and lottery in lieu is for the protection and restoration of the 4,500-acre park system that the public has entrusted us to use, entrusted us to manage. While the statutory funding threshold certainly has never been realized, and this is not the year to realize it, the historic funding allocations have been very important in protecting, restoring, and enhancing these valuable public lands. In Dakota County alone, the O&M and Lottery and Lou funds is the predominant funding source to manage 40% of the protected lands in Dakota County. With these funds, Dakota County Regional Parks are saving prairies, restoring oak savannas, attacking invasive species, and restoring impacted public waters. With these O&M funds, Dakota County Regional Parks is incrementally achieving sustainable ecosystems. We're decreasing long-term management costs. We're expanding wildlife habitat. We're recharging aquifers. We're protecting fisheries. And we're compatibly providing for high-quality recreation. The importance of protection and management of natural areas became evident when citizens recently in Dakota County voted to raise their own taxes to protect an additional $20 million worth of natural areas over and beyond the 4,500 acres of parkland that we currently manage. I believe that Dakota County is only a sampling of the broader public expectation across the state for continued protection management of these public lands. And as you know, land is truly not protected unless it's managed. The O&M Fund helps manage the lands in which we are entrusted. I ask your reconsideration to the $240,000 cut to O&M Regional Parks, and if cuts are necessary, as we understand, that such cuts don't exceed the governor's recommendation of
3%. Okay. I believe you said that the portion that we're actually looking at would be on page 3, lines 39 to 45. It's the $240,000 that you're concerned about there. And you said it's divided by, there's actually 10 entities that share that, so it'd be about $24,000 per organization.
It'd be about around $24,000 for Dakota County.
Okay. Yes. Cool. Any other questions from members? Okay. Thank you very much. We have Arnie Steproot. Did want to testify also? Arnie here? Do you have anything else? Okay, we have who else would like to provide public testimony on the proposals that we have in the draft that we handed out yesterday? Representative Pennis.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would like to address briefly the two items that are reduced, the ring dike reduction and the Red River flood mitigation reduction. I'm extremely concerned about those two reductions. It affects a large part of the state, the Red River Basin, and not only I, but not only me, but Representative Leader, Representative Lanning, Representative Eakin, Representative Lindgren, Representative Marquardt would also be very concerned about this. This has been a vital program to get all parties to come to the table as far as mediation. And then I think we can get some testimony on the ring dikes. The amount of money that has been provided has been reduced over the years, and I think there's maybe 100 requests or more for ring dikes, and maybe they can do 7 or so a year. Realizing that most of the members probably have been up there at one time or another, it's extremely flat and flows north, and we've been gotten many floods over the years, the worst being 97, but also 2001, and so I would certainly like to hear some more testimony and on those, and see if we could reconsider something there.
John Lindgren?
Chairman, thank you. And I would just like to reiterate what Representative Pennis has said. Those of us up in that country, if you've been up there, you know that with the country being so flat that we are so prone to floods and that. So we do need this, and we'd like to see this reinstated.
Okay. We're opening up for public testimony on items in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for letting us have some testimony today here. My name is Dick Nelson. I'm the financial coordinator for the Red River Watershed Management Board. Also have with me here John Finney, chairman of the board, as well as Jerome Deal, a board member and also chairman of the Flood Damage Reduction Work Group. We'd like to talk to you a little bit today about how sensitive, as Representative Pennis and Lindgren said, this is a very, very sensitive issue in the Red River Valley when it comes to flood damage reduction. I don't think there's anything that brings out more passion and that than getting these things cut. These cuts would effectively make it very difficult, if not impossible, for us to continue our flood damage reduction activities in the Red River Valley. I'd like to turn it over now to Mr. Finney, and that then he can speak on the ring dike issue.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. I'm John Finney from Kitson County. I'm the president of the Red River Water Management Board. And I'd like to continue on with what Representative Pennis has brought up this morning and give you a brief history of the ring dikes in the Red River Basin. In my watershed district in the extreme northwestern corner of the state, our program started in 1994. And during the 1997 extreme flood up there, there was not one failure of any farmstead ring dike, and millions of dollars worth of property was protected. After the 97 flood event, the special legislative session appropriated $900,000 in funding for farmstead ring dikes in the area, and it's been ongoing ever since, with the state now has contributed approximately $3.8 million. There are approximately 100 applications awaiting funding at this time, with the current funding at $125,000, as was set for the 04-05 legislative allotment. And the local match of $125,000, we are able to build approximately 8 to 10 dikes per year. And the majority of these dikes now are being built in the Middle River, Snake River, Tamarack River watershed. One of the reasons is they're especially inundated with flooding, and then in 2002, the Tamarack River watershed was added to the Middle River Snake River. Prior to this time, the Tamarack River district was ineligible for cost share funding from the local watershed districts. They were eligible for the 50% from the state, but there was no Red River Water Management Board or local cost share. And I believe that these people should not be denied dikes just because of the inability to access the program or because of where they happen to be on the list. Hopefully, with the present funding, we can complete the program in 8 to 10 years if the commitment remains the same by the legislature and with the local share. There have been millions of dollars in property damage saved already. We look for the same type of property damage to be offered to those built from this point on. Maybe if I could possibly go on a little bit, this type of flood damage reduction projects not only serve to strengthen the Red River Basin rural community, they also enable families to remain in their dwellings without having to move or evacuate every time a flood is approaching. The property values are maintained in the district and continue to generate tax fund for the local government units. It's important to note that we are not only protecting homes, but giving securities to the business aspect of the ag community. It is, of course, as you probably all are aware, is much cheaper to protect these homes and rather than buying them out and relocating them elsewhere, as it's usually many, many miles that have to be moved in order to get out of the floodplain. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jerome Deal out of Travers County, and I'm co-chair of the Red River Flood Reduction Work Group. And I speak in reference to the $210,000 that come out of the Red River Mediation Agreement. We find that to be a very critical issue in the Red River Valley. If you remember that in the Red River Valley, flood damage reduction was not getting done. It was completely lawsuits, people against people against agencies. nothing was happening. And the legislature appropriated $100,000 to try and mediate that rather than settle it in the courts. Well, we did mediate it and come to an agreement in 1998. And we worked through the flood damage reduction work group to set up project teams in each of the watersheds. We've coordinated all the watersheds from the northern to the southern part of the valley. These project teams are consisted of the locals, of the agencies, of the environmentalists, all working together. It's a unique situation that you won't find crackling across the entire country. And these teams are moving forward. They're actually starting to compile some work. It takes a while to get the chips off the shoulders from the old fights, but the chips are disappearing. The work groups that go with this money, as of the moment, we have a couple of them working on the governor's initiative, a couple of speed projects. We anticipate the work groups working on, if the CREP comes through, working on targeting the high priority areas. And the work groups are busy. It's a forum to get all the agencies together. I think it's one of the greatest things to hit in the Red River Valley to help finally start stopping the flood damage. The flood damage, as you know, in the 97 flood hit close to $4 billion. We have teams working together, we have a unified approach, and we have the agencies working together. And I think it would be a terrible shame to lose this $210,000, the support for those project teams, because it would effectively stop flood damage reduction work in the valley. We'd be back in the old ways.
Yeah, I know, me too.
So I would beg the committee to put that back in. It is a necessary item for the valley. And I would say, in my experience over the many years, it's the closest cooperation I have ever seen in the valley, and we have the most hope of actually getting something done. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. With regard to the flood mitigation or mediation agreement activities, would is there local matches what type of local support do you actually provide for that process or activity?
Yes, Mr. Lockesmo would have that. There is local matches against that money.
Okay. I know what you said there was for the ring dikes, and so I was just wondering if there was a similar arrangement for the others. Okay, and this is not, just my understanding that there, on the ring dike situation, that there was a situation where we had some federal dollars that had come into play that really kind of minimized the use of this program, and that's not the case, is what you're telling me. I had a misunderstanding on that.
Yes, Mr. Chair. No, there's no federal dollars coming in towards the ring dike program.
All right. Okay. Are there any other questions of the testifiers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have additional public testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. John Curry with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, and I have a handout that should be in the hands of Ms. Brick right now from the Red River Basin Commission. Just want to piggyback the testimony that you just had. Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy and Minnesota Audubon are the environmental organizations most involved in Red River Basin flood damage reduction. And we strongly support the mediation working group. It's $210,000 that is the best bang for the buck that this committee can spend, and we hope that you can get the money back in there. I want to make sure that folks understand that the CREP dollars, which we hope go through, are hand in glove with the flood damage reduction efforts in the Red River Valley. It's about one quarter of the entire state, a little bit more than one quarter of the entire state. The water flow problems are very serious in the Red River Valley. It can be coordinated with natural resource enhancements. We're working with federal dollars, local dollars, and a small portion of state dollars. We're leveraging private landowners, we're leveraging farmers, local governments, and it's working up there. We hope that you can continue the funding because it's a great project that's working, it's helping lives, and it's helping the natural resource. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Anyone else would like to testify on items that we have in the draft proposal? It's speak up now or forever hold your peace sort of thing. So I want to give everyone an opportunity for any concerns or advice that you have, because we're going to start to craft this into our final proposal yet today. So, any other testimony? Any other public testimony? Okay, what I'd like to do then, seeing no public testimony requests, is I'd like to take a 20-minute recess. Members will come back here at about 25 after 9. Continue our work. I'd like to recess for 20 minutes.
Thank you.
would be a fee increase dollar. I doubt it, but it'll be on the table for discussion. If not, our language. We're going to bring the meeting to order. While we were out, I had a couple of things brought to my attention that I'd like to take care of. And so what I'm going to do is moving House File 1867, be recommended to pass and will be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And I will also move Amendment 1215, which is a delete everything amendment to House File 1867. So that's the language that we had passed out and was talking about with regard to draft language for the omnibus bill. And before we get into other amendments, I'd like to make a few corrections on the in the draft that we have. Is Mr. Myers here from DNR? Or Deputy Commissioner? That's right. I didn't see you there. I'm sorry. On page 6, section 12, I understand there's a language with regard to volunteers that is already current law, I'm told, so we don't need that language. Could you maybe give us a real quick understanding?
Chair, members, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. This is brought to my attention from the Trails and Waterways Division that this language wasn't needed anymore.
Okay.
What's the language?
Representative Hackbar?
Duplicative, I mean, sir.
I'm sorry. It's portion of your bill that they're talking about on page 6, section 12, in the ATV bill. You had a piece in there that was talking about volunteers and their services to aid in activities for off-highway vehicle trail systems. And the department is saying that that's current law. They don't need this language. But I'm wondering if what you were hoping to have happen is if this is more specific. I didn't know.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I believe this was part of Representative Dill's language that he added in last, that amendment that he had. And if it's current law, I don't mind deleting the section, and I don't think Representative Dill would.
Is the department that brought this to our attention, that Mr. Meyer?
Is that
Mr.
correct?
Chair, members, perhaps I'll have Lori Martinson talk about this. It's my understanding that this was part of the ambassador language remaining from Section 2678.
With all the questions on your faces, we will pass on this one for right now. I thought that was a done deal. The other one, Director Martinson is there, I believe on page 26, you had a concern with regard on line 21. There was a change that you wanted there. Can you maybe explain that? You want to change a must to a may?
Members of the committee, my name is Lori Martinson from the Department of Natural Resources. On line 21, I would prefer having the must change to a may. It's my understanding that this document from the Forest Service is quite old and they don't update it regularly. we refer to it now, but I just don't want to be tied to referring to something that may not exist.
You want to check that out, and we'll
and Mr. Chairman, again, I think this is part of what Representative Dale brought forward, and I don't have a problem with changing that to May.
Okay. We will incorporate the May, delete must, and insert May. I'll just incorporate that in.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
Shouldn't we note specifically what the problems are with that? I mean, if this is being followed in the federal forest, why shouldn't, what's, I'd like to know some specific examples of something that aren't a good idea, that are obsolete, that should be changed for the state before we get rid of the requirement. It certainly seems, you know, unless there's something distinctly wrong with that.
But actually, Rip and Con, I feel just the opposite, in that I'd like them to prove as to why we should be following the federal government's guidelines blindly, when we don't even have those guidelines in front of us. I'd prefer that be a permissive language and not just going down a pathway that I don't know where it leads.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if someone has thought, I mean, supposedly these are, I mean, the answer would be to get to, I think I've asked them the same question. What's wrong with those? We can change it to what's right with those, too. I mean, someone did write this language saying that it was a good idea. I assume if there are guidelines, it means that somebody's thought about it and that there's something that's reasonable. So if there's anything that's not reasonable.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, I was just at the National Off-Highway Vehicle Coordinators Conference, and what troubled me is that the Forest Service has actually taken very little proactive action to address the issue of off-highway vehicle management. Bureau of Land Management is actually much more aggressive in dealing with the issue and proactive in trying to manage off-highway vehicles. Some of those documents are like 20 years old, and they're not keeping pace with what's going on regarding off-highway vehicles.
And Rep. Sankine, this is specifically to definitions and specifications. Yes. So we're talking about some finite specifics here that may be outdated, and I think that's what they're wanting to prevent from being locked in on.
Okay.
It's not everything that the book is talking about. It's just the definitions and specifications. Okay. Representative Hoppe.
Question for Representative Kahn. Representative Kahn, are you saying that we should change the must from a may to a should?
No. We never use should. Can't you remember that?
Looking
never
for clarification.
Must choose between must and may. Never do should.
Okay, so as author of the amendment on page 26, line 21, changing must to may, and we'll incorporate that into the amendment. Let's see, with regard to the I'd like to hand out a new spreadsheet and also make some changes based on testimony that was provided for us this morning. Members, we had testimony this morning that indicated that the selections that we had identified in the draft document with regard to ring dikes and Red River flood mitigation was a reduction that would actually cause some harm and difficulty in carrying out the tasks that we have all been supporting. And so I'm changing the proposal with regard to the spreadsheet to change those to zero, and then on the top line, the budget reduction for DNR, increasing that reduction by the $335,000 to $2,606,000. And so this means that the DNR would then deal with this additional $335,000 reduction in the same way that they've been handling across the board 3%, and that they will then use their department discretion as to where the reduction should occur. Representative Kahn.
Chairman, I have an amendment to your amendment, which I'd like to pass out, which takes a different approach to that.
Yeah.
So, Paige could pass it out. I'll discuss it while it's being passed out. I also tacked, my approach to it was a little broader than yours, Mr. Chairman. I looked at those three reductions, not just two of them, and thought that they were unfair. The reduction to the metro, the Ring Dykes reduction, the Red River Flood Mediation reduction, the Metro Parks Grant reduction. And I thought all of those specific ones were unfair, particularly since the general budgets had already taken that hit. So the amendment that I'm passing out, the A3 amendment, and it may need a little wording to make sure that we've got is that mine? I would like to delete, my amendment would be to delete those three lines and adjust the remainder, and I think I actually want to adjust the entire bill to just a slightly greater across-the-board appropriation, to do it to the entire bill, not just DNR, to make up the funding for those specific three events. And, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd like a roll call vote on that.
Okay, Representative Connors requests a roll call vote on the A3 amendment. Is there any discussion?
I want to make sure that it covers the appropriation in the whole bill. The language might need a little tweaking, or does it? Yes, Mr. Helen, you're...
You need a clarification from Mr. Helen?
Mr. Chair,
I want to make sure that it's covering the appropriation in the entire bill. Okay.
Mr. Helen.
Mr. Chair and members and Representative Kahn, it does cover the appropriations sections, which basically are 2 to 5. It doesn't include Section 7, which is the permanent school fund appropriation, but it includes the others.
Okay. And, Mr. Chairman, I just think this is an element of fairness, and I think it restores the Metro Park grant and it restores the two Red River ones. And actually, I'd like a roll call vote on that.
You've asked a roll call on your amendment?
Yes.
You've asked for a roll call.
Oh, okay.
Okay, is there Representative Kingleston?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To this amendment, the A3, I also have another amendment coming up, the 1225A, which would relate to the Metro Parks cut. And so I'm wondering how these two work together, and maybe Council can let us know if we do one, do we not need the other, or how does this relate to each other?
Representative Tinglestad, as far as I can tell, what's happening here is that Representative Kahn is proposing we not reduce any of the three areas that we've talked about, the Ring Dykes and or the flood mitigation or Metro Parks, and that instead of 3% reduction across the board for departments, we'd be increasing that reduction by whatever the additional $335,000 adds up.
Someone said 3.25 million something or something. And that's just a guess.
That's essentially what I understand the amendment is.
So,
Representative
Chairman, as I look at Representative Tinglestad's amendment, this looks like this is getting rid of the double dipping, the double cut. So I think that if mine passes, yours isn't necessary because I don't object to the proportional. I don't object to the proportional cut. You know, I think that they should be cut whatever that 3.25% is. I think that that's fair.
And members, I would be opposing this amendment. Any other questions or concerns? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so I get a couple clarifications, this would be a deeper cut to the Zoological Board into the office of OEA above and beyond what was in the proposal of our bill?
Representative McNamara, this increases the across-the-board reductions. So, yes, it would.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. So that would, we could read into that might affect things like the outreach into rural Minnesota at the zoo, like the zoo mobile and things like that?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, let me point out, instead of taking entirely the cut from threatened areas, we spread it out a little bit, so it's probably deepening the cut by less than 10%. I don't know that, but that's kind of what the number. It's just kind of, I don't like any of these cuts, and if we didn't have to meet that target at the bottom, I just would have added the money back. But I don't like the idea of going throughout the process with those things being cut on the package. And I think, you know, a smaller additional cut to the other ones gets rid of the unfairness in these sets of cuts.
Okay.
So that's just, if you don't think it's unfair, then, you know,
the motion occurs on H1867A3 amendment. All those in favor saying, oh, you want a roll call. Roll call, please call the roll.
Representative Osmond?
No.
Representative Cornish?
No.
Representative Dill?
No.
Representative Hackbarth?
No.
Representative Hoppe?
No.
Representative Kahn?
Yes.
Representative Conan?
No.
Representative Lindgren?
No.
Representative McNamara?
No.
Representative Penis?
No.
Representative Tingelstad?
No.
Representative Wagenius?
Yes.
Representative Wozeluk?
With the 2 yes and 10 no, motion fails. Members, we have to come back to the proposal I have on the spreadsheet. I think we just make a motion that we accept the spreadsheet as presented with the changes. We also know there's one other change on the bottom of the administrative penalty order. That was changed from $5,000 increase to zero, and it's my understanding that bill did not make it through the process. Is it Mr. Reinhold?
Chairman, that is correct. That was a governor's position that was introduced at a bill that I believe in government ops did not pass out, so the spreadsheet reflects the decision of that committee.
Okay. And so the numbers have been adjusted accordingly, the totals have been adjusted accordingly, and by approving the spreadsheet, the motion would be to approve the spreadsheet and have staff then make the appropriate changes within the omnibus bill to reflect the spreadsheet. Any questions on that? Representative Wagenius.
Mr. Chairman, in your increasing reduction to DNR, I would agree that that's probably where it has to be. And I think DNR did make some appropriate cuts to that they brought to us, but there was one that, or several that concerned me, and one in particular I want to raise is where they cut folks that were doing on-the-ground restoration, the stream protection, that section for ecological services. I would not like to see, I think that was a mistake cut. And I would not like to see that cut be made deeper. And in fact, I think that's something we should restore because, I mean, all of us have been talking about what do we do to protect our waters and our ground and protect our wildlife management areas, and we're cutting the very thing with that particular DNR cut that we all say we want. I mean, a lot of us are saying, well, they're going to cut some administrative costs, and I heard consensus here, but not that. So I would be want some assurance that DNR was not going to further cut that particular area.
Other comments? Okay, I'd like to point out that on this spreadsheet change, the ring dikes are now at zero, which should, and also the Red River flood mitigation is at zero with regard to any reductions. So that has taken care of the concerns that were expressed by Representative Lindgren and Representative Penis, as well as the testifiers from that watershed area. So we really appreciate giving us that advice and enlightening us on the impacts that that would have had. Representative Kahn.
Can you point out, Mr. Chairman, how the spreadsheet balances then? I don't think you've met your, I don't see where you've taken additional cuts to meet your target. Somebody just pointed out. Must be
Chairman. Mr. Reinholz.
Representative Kahn, if the changes that were made are on the sheet handed out are in shaded.
Yes.
There no longer is a reduction in the DNR on ring dikes or Red River flood mediation. There no longer is a revenue credit of $5,000 down at the bottom for administrative penalty orders. And on the first line, the budget reduction in this recommendation is $2,606,000 versus the one that was presented yesterday of $2,266,000. So the additional reduction is now listed underneath the line item change called budget reduction in DNR. It still balances at the bottom. On the far right column, the bottom two numbers, the net effect of this bill is still a reduction in the general fund of $3,583,000, which is the target.
Why don't I understand that? How can you reduce the reduction to DNR and still have the numbers add up to be the same?
We didn't reduce the reduction to DNR. We reduced the reduction in two programs that are underneath that area.
The reduction to the, if you're looking at the line item called agency totals, general fund, it is $5 million or $5,000 more. It went from 8,456 to 8,461. That reflects the $5,000 of the administrative penalty order. The total is still only different by that amount because it was moved within change items already within the DNR. So the total to the DNR changed just very slightly. It was just the individual items within DNR that were the changes are directed to that is different in this proposal.
Representative Guinness.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I probably wasn't clear, but I was wondering if DNR could come up and tell us whether they could take this reduction without reducing anything on the ground, I mean, any on-the-ground services that, whether they could take this administratively and not cut on-the-ground things like stream protection.
Representative Rubinius, if you wanted to have the department testify that they can, we can cut them $335,000 more money, it's not going to make a difference. I don't think they'll be able to give you much comfort in that area, but it'll make a difference.
But the question is, I know they're going to cut. The question is where they're going to cut.
Mr. Chair.
Deputy Commissioner, you gave us a pretty good outline as to what you had planned up to this point with regard to the 3% reduction. Have you had any chance to, you know, this is just kind of something new that's come at you this morning.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Mark Olston, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. I can't come in here this morning and articulate where we would be making further reductions at this time. I can tell you that we would follow the same budget principles that we laid out for you last year as we went through budget reductions and the same principles that we followed this year, which is try to not impact our mission and preserve the integrity of our mission and target those areas where we can minimize those reductions to the field and minimize reductions to the field and continue with our mission.
Representative Cornish.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I don't want to restrict the DNR from their cuts wherever they want to make them. I think we got to leave it up to them because we have our concerns about specific areas, naturally mine being one of enforcement, but I'm not going to ask them not to make cuts there because then that's going to force them to go somewhere else. And vice versa, if we say they can't make cuts in ecological services, some program, they might go to some other area. So I'd just leave it up to their good judgment and then oversee them later and tell them where they did right and wrong.
Okay. Thank you very much. Members, my motion would be to approve the spreadsheet, the change spreadsheet that's been presented to you, and incorporate that into the amendment. The staff will make that make the changes in the amendment to reflect the adjustments in the spreadsheet. Any questions on that? Okay. Motion on approval of the spreadsheet. Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is amended. We would now like to go to the amendments that members had presented to us.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, have we adopted the delete all amendment?
We have the delete all amendment in front of us. We have not adopted it yet. We're still making amendments.
Amending it. Okay, Mr.
Once
Chairman,
we get that finished, then we'll make it.
Then make one adoption.
Make one document.
Then I have an oral amendment, if I could.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, on line 6, this is language that was part of a larger document.
Page
6, I'm sorry, of
page
the delete
six.
All amendment. Line 25 through 27 refers to volunteers. This was language, a part of a much larger amendment that we previously put on here. In looking at the wording and statute, state volunteers is a problem. If they were state volunteers, we'd be covering them for all kinds of things, workman's comp. I'd like to make a verbal amendment to delete the language in line 25 through 27.
Okay. Representative Dill moves to delete section 12. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended. First amendment I have is amendment 1225A, Representative Tinglestad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This relates to what was mentioned a few minutes ago relating to Metro Parks, and when we heard in testimony the other day that DNR had slated Metro Parks for across the board 3% of $99,000 cut, and then in addition now with this spreadsheet there would be an 8% $240,000 cut. It just doesn't seem fair that there would be a double cut, a total of 11%, when most of the other groups are taking a 3% or slightly larger cut. So with this amendment, it would say that DNR could not make cuts from any of their grant programs, so it would avoid the double cut.
Representative Conn.
Mr. Chairman, are there other grant programs other than the Metro Parks grant program?
We do know that there's a dike, ring dike grant program.
Well,
I don't know whether there else others there may be. Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, to Representative Tinglestad's comments about Metropolitan Parks, that is a pass-through grant. The legislature establishes and sets those fees. You've done that through your appropriations bill. We would not have the authority to go in and make further reductions beyond that to the Metro Grant program. So we would oppose this amendment for that purpose. If your intention was to protect from the Department of Natural Resources, you don't have to do that. We can't do that. Our 99 that we brought in was a recommendation purely for you to review and consider. You've changed that. We'll have to identify $99,000 someplace else within the agency to cover those costs. So for the purpose of Metropolitan Parks, this amendment isn't necessary. And it is actually further restrictive as we try to identify other areas within the budget. It would be more restrictive for us to be able to make other reductions in other areas.
Representative Tinglestad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner Holston, I appreciate the comment on that. However, I would still like to keep this amendment on the bill, basically for comfort language at this point. So appreciate the committee support.
Okay. Deputy Commissioner, when you're talking about items that we have just kind of taken off the table, like with regard to the ring dike grant effort and also the Red River flood mitigation effort, are those... Are you able to take reductions in those grant areas, or they have the same type of protection as you're saying the Metropolitan Parks have?
Mr. Chair, I need to go back and check. I know internally in our discussions and in our budget discussions, Red River Mediation would not be one of those targeted areas, but there are a number of other ones that we would potentially have access to if this amendment was not to go on. If it was to go on, we would not have access to those opportunities. And I can have some of the directors come up and give you specific examples of the varieties of general fund grants that are out there that we would look at. But I would tell you this, Red River Mediation would not be one of those that we would be looking at.
I think you've given me the answer that I really need, is that there is potential that other grants programs can be reduced in order to meet our targets. And I think that having this language in there has it a situation where that we need to have an agreement as to where those reductions are going to be occurring. We know that we had a good explanation of where the 3% reduction is going to come from. Felt comfortable in that area. I think as we work forward, we want to make sure that the $335,000 additional reduction that we've now are putting on to burden onto the department, that we'd like to have some communication on that. So having this language in at this point, I think, is a good idea. And then as we're able to come to agreements, we can, you know, get this get more flexibility back to the department. Any questions on it, members? The motion occurs on Amendment 1225A. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Representative Cornish. Amendment 1225B. Representative Cornish moves that amendment. And Cornish, this is the amendment on appropriation to evaluate construction aggregate potential.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and this is was a standalone bill for a time, and now I understand we're rolling it into here. This is the way it came out of the Education Finance Committee, a study of the aggregates on this trust lands, and should generate quite a bit of revenue into the fund, and I would encourage your support of the amendment.
Any questions on amendments? The motion occurs on Amendment 1225B. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended. The amendment is amended. Next amendment is JH115, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do I need to move it, to move this amendment? Okay, thank you. What this is it... is the citizens monitoring of water quality. It's a word change from may to shall, and then it extends the sunset from June 30th 05 to out to 09. So I'm hoping I'll get both Representative Kahn and Representative Poppy support on the word change and the date change.
Representative Kahn.
The chairman, just make it must and it'll be okay. Must is a much better word than shall. And that comes from a pamphlet on writing things in plain English.
Denny, I agree you really should do that.
Make it must.
Well, my amendment is to make it shall.
Well, make
Mr.
it must.
Mr. Chair.
I'm just telling you to make it must.
I think I'll leave it with shall, Mr. Chair. Wait, go ahead. Mr.
If
Chair, Representative.
If you must, you can avoid a long essay on why must is better than shall. And it is distinctly, I believe, this was something that came out of the Reagan administration, in fact, in terms of writing regulations in plain English. And if you want to think about the difference between must and shall, think of how you would use it in English conversation, like, I must do this, or shall I invite this person to tea, is the difference in terms of the implication. And must be, we did have support, and actually this is something that some of us worked on in the House at one point as an instruction to the revisor's office. We did go through a few chapters in doing instruction to the revisor's office to change all, every place shall appeared in the statutes, to change it to must. We actually had support. It was a House position, which I think we lost, in the Senate. So it's really, just believe me, it's a really good idea.
Mr. Chair, could I make an oral amendment?
Sure, you can.
Mr. Helen, if you could follow, this is a pretty complicated one. Could you on line 6 change the word shall to should? No. Oh, excuse me. Excuse me. Could you change the word shall to must, M-U-S-T?
We will incorporate that into your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll give you my file on
and thank you, Representative Kahn, for your support.
I've been around long enough to know you don't ask those kind of questions. The motion, any other questions? Representative Pass.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On what page is this in the delete all?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Howland.
Members, it would be placed on page 16 after line 22.
Because it's not changing something that's currently in the bill, it's just an addition, they're just placing it in the bill to match up with the statute and sections. And matter of fact, that's something I'd like to, I should have pointed that out earlier. As we go through these, when you're looking for where in the bill things are happening, they're laid out so that the statutes and the sections are in order. So if you look to the statute section, you'd be able to find 115.06, and if it's not there, then you know it's being added in. Because they actually create, in some cases, new statutes, so you may not find a number anywhere.
Thank you.
Motion reoccurs on JH115. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment is amended. Representative Hockey. We have amendment 1208. Representative Hoppe moves that amendment. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is my amendment. It's also a standalone bill, but I understand we're going to put it on here and be happy to answer any questions anybody has, or if not, I'd like to move the amendment.
Okay. Any questions from members? Representative Hoppe, this is this advisory board is advisory to the MPCA or the OEA?
OEA.
Do they have someone from OEA down?
Mr. Chair, Dave Benke with the Office of Environmental Assistance.
Thank you, Mr. Benke. I understand that there was some, at some point, some people may have had objections to advisory boards in general. Can you kind of give us just the highlights of why this particular one is important for us to keep and retain?
Mr. Chairman, this amendment actually contains three advisory councils to the Office of Environmental Assistance. They're all important from the standpoint of providing to us independent outside information related to our programs, both in the development and in the implementation phases. As you know, the Office of Environmental Assistance provides both financial and technical assistance, and so the real value here is providing the right kind of both technical and financial resources for the projects that are out there. And that to us is an incredible value, and would ask that you would provide a positive recommendations in this amendment.
Okay. Any questions from members? Thank you for that clarification, because I'm sure it's going to come up somewhere in the process, and I needed that additional info.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The Representative Hoppe's motion recurs on Amendment to 1208. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Let's see, Representative Hackbarth, we have Amendment 1220. Representative Hackbarth moves that amendment.
Mr. Chairman, this amendment has to do with the big game hunting and the use of off-road vehicles, etc. The current bill has some problems with. We don't want ATVs and four-wheel drive trucks, that sort of thing, going on hiking trails, and this takes care of that during the hunting season. We don't want people being out hiking and have to run across these things, and we don't want the ATV and trucks tearing up those hiking trails. So that's what this does. It takes care of that issue.
Any questions? Okay, the motion occurs on Amendment 1220. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Amendment 1211, Representative Dill. Senator Dill moves Amendment 1211, as I believe is to the snowmobile grant and aid account.
Thank you, Chairman Osment. Members, this was a bill that traveled through committee and made it to civil law, and because the Senate author didn't get the hearing done, died in civil law. It also had a the reason it went to civil law was because of a liability provision that we put in that would have liability protection for the clubs, the snowmobile clubs that implement the program. This was approved. There was no problem with the bill. We consulted with the folks regarding the liability provisions. It was determined that those liability provisions are already in law and that they were not needed in this bill. And so we brought the bill to the committee here as an amendment and would like to move the amendment forward, and supported by the DNR.
And Representative Dill, I think that the explaining the reason that you actually need this amendment, I think it's because of the trails going on waters, and that you might remind us of that issue, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, this bill, we did a demonstration project, as was testified in the committee, over the last half a dozen years up in Voyageurs National Park, which has worked wonderfully. And we are extending the possibility for more on-ice trails rather than being in the woods, giving new opportunities for snowmobilers on lakes that would have groomed trails. So essentially what we would end up with this bill would be a marked groomed trail from as far northwest as the northwest angle down to the city of Ely. So it's really an unprecedented trail, and it will be a great opportunity for folks.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, was there any objection to any from any groups to this expansion?
Representative Dill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, there were no objections, and this is supported by the Minnesota United Snowmobiler Association and by the DNR. It was unanimously supported by the State Association at the Minnesota Rendezvous up in Walker. And again, I'd like to remind the committee that the money to implement this will be appropriated in the next biennium. You'll notice down in line 21 that it doesn't become effective till July 1, 2005, and that the money will come 100% from the snowmobile trail and enforcement account, which consists of registrations and gas tax. So this has no impact on any programs, general fund type programs.
Mr. Chairman.
Second.
I think the question was, what about, you know, the neighbors and the communities in that area? Because they, no, I don't know. Have there been any objections raised from the groups that
you said? Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, this is broadly supported by chambers of commerce, communities, neighborhoods. I mean, this is the trails that are already on ice are used by thousands of people, and in my work in this part of the tourism industry, we've received no complaints about this. In fact, Mr. Chairman and members, one of the benefits of a lake trail system is that in the spring when the lakes thaw out, the trails go away and they're no longer seen or a part of the environment.
Okay. Any questions on the amendment? Okay, the motion recurs on Amendment 1211. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Prevail. Successful. The next is Amendment 1225, Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chairman Osment, members. Last year, we adopted for people putting in performance-based septic systems a $25 per tank fee. One of the things about putting in a performance-based septic system is that we're trying to clean up the water along areas, particularly along lakes in Minnesota, where we have substandard soils for systems like a mound system or a more traditional septic system. So what we did by these performance-based systems have numerous, or very commonly have numerous tanks in their technology. And so what we're really doing when we did that last year was penalizing someone for having the thought of actually putting in a performance-based system. And so what this amendment does is change the fee from $25 per tank to $25 per installation. And this is a really big thing in areas like in St. Louis, Lake, and Cook County, where there are so many of those systems being put in, and other counties as well. But in my district, it's a really, it's a large thing. And MPCA is, maybe we want to hear from them, but I think they're at least neutral on this, mm-hmm. and maybe even supportive.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand where Representative Dill is going, but per installation could be per tank again, and I wonder if you wanted to say per system instead of per installation. That is just a suggestion.
We have someone from MPCA that would like to speak to the amendment so we can understand some of the terminology that's here and the impact of the amendment. Representative Kahn.
Let me just add another question as they're coming up. What about, and I know in some places you're getting things like condo associations and that kind of thing. I wonder if this should be per household installation. Yes. I understand how you want to, you know, you don't want a single person mm-hmm. paying anymore. But if the installation is covering, you know, a lot of maybe even pretty high-priced mm-hmm. associations.
A cluster,
things, I don't
Mr.
Think.
Chairman. You know, I think you're referring, Representative Kahn, to like cluster systems sure. that would serve either condos or houses, yeah. and maybe Mr. Chairman, MPCA can address that question as well.
Okay.
Mr. Welcome. Chair and members, thank you. I'm Gretchen Sable with the Pollution Control Agency. The way the e-bill was written last year, it was a per-tank fee, and it had kind of an unintended consequence for performance systems that provide better treatment, but they do it by having extra covered sewage receptacles as part of their sewage treatment system. And so we agree with the change to limit these performance systems to a single $25 fee and think that would be an appropriate change. It would kind of reward them for doing more for the environment. As far as dealing with condos and multiple homes, for right now, if we look at the revenue generation of it, I don't think there's a lot of impact from that. A lot of those systems will already have a tank per home anyhow, and the ones that don't aren't many, and so it won't make much difference.
Representative Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I do think we could insert after the on line 15, after the word per, we could put household system installation. And then I think it would be, how do you feel about that? That would be clarify that that's what we mean.
Mr. Chair, we could make that change in our materials that go out, and we think that would be clear.
Hey, Representative Dill, would you repeat that?
Okay, on line 15, an oral amendment, Mr. Chairman, on line 15, after the word per, we'd put household system, insert household system, and then leave the word installation. And in my mind, we maybe should ask Representative Kahn if that should be a must or a may or a should in front of that. But
you don't have it. It's nowhere. There isn't any.
I'm just kidding.
It's just is. I don't think we need to. Is a pretty clear word.
Anyway, I think that would clarify, and that would be my oral amendment.
Okay. Let's just before we actually make that, Mr. Helen, is that the best way to accomplish that?
I believe so, as long as the agency thinks it'll work.
Okay. All right. I can even incorporate, yeah. I just wanted to make sure it was okay to the best way to do it. The Representative Dill, we'll just incorporate that change into your amendment.
Okay.
And Representative Gilstead, do you have a question?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Ms. Sable. I remember when this bill was being heard in the committee here, there was some testimony about homeowners purchasing tanks and kind of circumventing sort of the intent of collecting the $25 fee. We kind of talked about this as a committee, and I don't think you need any statutory changes on that, because at this point it's current law, so that if the homeowner is doing it to circumvent the law, I mean, they're basically doing something illegal, right? So you guys are taking care of that internally?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And
Representative Tinglestad, and we're beginning the audit process right now and trying to sort out who did what and how they've done it, so we'll know more in the next year of how that all goes to. Thank you.
And do you have any ideas what the fiscal impact would be on this change?
Mr. Chair, I believe it would be pretty minimal. The number of performance systems that go in isn't high right now. And like I said before, they deserve that kind of a help. Before, when we were talking about reducing it to a per system, if we did that across the board for everybody, then the fiscal impact would be probably up to 20%. But since we're just narrowing it to this one universe of performance systems, which we actually define in the code, this is a good and appropriate change.
Okay. Any questions? The motion reoccurs on Amendment 1225 as changed. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Prevails. Amendment 1202, Representative Hackbart.
Mr. Chairman, I think we're still trying to work out some changes to this with the department, so if we could take it up later.
Let's set that over to the side. Going to Amendment JH117, Representative Tinglestad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This relates to funding a grant program for local governments and lake associations regarding exotic aquatic plant management and lake protection. And we talked about this as part of a bill earlier, but I think this is kind of compromise language, which actually just relates to the current programs. And so I don't know if Mr. Botzik would like to explain this further.
Okay. Representative Tingle said we'll move that amendment, and Mr. Botzik.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. Gary Botzik for the Minnesota Lakes Association. About a week or so ago, Representative Howes brought a bill dealing with the unrefunded gas tax, trying to get a study done, and this is compromised language. This is a study. This is not established a grant program. This just works with ask DNR to work with shareholder groups, including the Minnesota Lakes Association, but also the Association of Minnesota Counties and Watershed Districts and Soil and Water Conservation Boards, to look at a possible grant program. And we would have to look at funding sources, and that would all come back as part of the budget deliberations and discussions next session. So the timing would be such that the study results would be back for next session, a budget year. One of the things, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Representative Wagenius, we'd be looking at it. Wisconsin's got a very much more elaborate water quality program, and we'd like to look at some of their funding sources and some of their grant programs and see what availability or applicability they might have to Minnesota. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell, Mr. Chairman, and I'll try to answer any questions.
Hey, Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think that we need an amendment, but I would like us to ask when DNR does this study, because I assume we're going to adopt this, that as part of their report back to the House and Senate Committee, that they are very specific in which chemicals can be used in lakes from grants. Because we heard some real contradictory testimony earlier on in that, and DNR uses some very specific chemicals, and I would not like to see us then expand and let other folks use chemicals that the DNR did not use. So particularly when they have been untested for what they might do to our fish, which is the basic concern here. So would that be a comfortable assumption to make here?
Deputy Commissioner, who?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, yes, that would be a safe assumption to make, that we would not be granting authority to other entities that we would not regulate, that we would give up authority that we have or to regulate chemicals or those things.
Mr. Chairman, if that could just be part of the report to us is what I am suggesting, and I don't think it needs language, but part of what's going on here is exotic aquatic plant management. Part of that is, you know, beetles or whatever. but part of it is chemicals. And the use of chemicals beyond which you use, or chemicals that, and I know you all are going to get back and get back to us about the possibility of hormone disruptors on fish, which is something I think we need to investigate. That's all. If that works for you.
Deputy Commissioner, can you tell me, will the department be able to do this internally with the, or will there be additional expense on this?
Mr. Chair.
What a little question.
Yeah, trying to process the amendments, it's a whole new experience over on this side of the aisle, trying to figure out all things, what we can and cannot do. My initial reaction in looking at this amendment we can go out and work with our constituents to try to identify this. I would bring it to the committee's attention, though, that the way the amendment is drafted currently, we're on the JH-117. Mm-hmm. It is developing a grant program with our local watershed communities for this program and others for lakeshore restoration, lakeshore protection, habitat regeneration are all good things that we should be looking to do. The concern that the way the amendment is drafted right now, you're specifically focused in on the water rec account of boat license fees and underfunded gas tax. Those dollars currently are targeted for boat safety, water safety, and development of development and acquisition of public accesses. And that's where those statutorily those dollars are attached to right now. This amendment as drafted is targeted specifically at that arena, and we'd suggest maybe making that a little broader and not targeting it again at that specific one.
Well, Mr. Chairman, when you look at what we're looking at, exotic plant management and lake protection, that's clearly ought to be a function of water access. I don't think there's any problem with the specific language. In fact, what as they're doing this, and I really, I like the idea of telling departments to do things without always giving them extra money to do it. I mean, the legislature ought to be able to have some direction as to what they ought to be doing this. They ought to be looking at this, and we ought to be able to tell them to do it if they're not. But I think. We know we have lots and lots of strains on the general fund, and I think we ought to be looking at more of these special funds to do this. So I think this language as it's written is just fine. And one of the things they can come up with as they're doing this is we shouldn't do it from this fund. We should do it from a new fund, from the general fund or so forth. It doesn't, but I think moving in this direction is the right direction to go.
And Mr. Chair, members, my whole point is to bring it out that the statute is very clear in, it's not so clear in water rec, but the guidance of the statute towards how those funds are to be allocated. Yes, exotic program is part of water rec, but in an educational component. That's the way the statute is laid out right now. And I'm just trying to point out to you that this amendment is drafted specifically at one account that is under pressure right now, as many of the other accounts are, and the legislature is going to have to make a determination in how those funds need to be allocated, and is this the appropriate funding source, as this amendment is drafted, for this future grant program. That's all I'm just pointing that out as something that you need to consider as you move forward.
Mr. Botvick, was there a reason that you asked for this specific fund to be targeted, or is it, was your objective to try and get dollars for the grant program and other sources could be considered? What was your objective?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's primarily an outgrowth of the original bill, which was dealing with the unrefunded gas tax. If you recall, or you may not recall, but the gas tax study, the last gas tax study done on motorboat, more about consumption came in 1998 and became effective in 99. And that came in at 1.54. It was legislature rounded it off to 1.5. So that alone is a funding source. The 0.4% of consumption would equal something between $200,000 and $300,000. That remains in the gas tax fund. You know, obviously there's needs there too, but that money had been committed toward this purpose. We the legislature would have had upwards of $200,000 to $300,000 more per year toward the water rec account. So we let that slip away. So this study could look at one of the recommendations could be to change that gas tax from 1.5 to 1.54. Again, that would have that bill would have to travel to another committee because of that. But in a long session, we'd have that opportunity. But we'd be looking for other funding sources. Again, looking at what Wisconsin. Wisconsin, for instance, has a unrefunded gas tax of 1.46%, and they are collecting over $11 million compared to our 7.6. And they are able to run a lot of different grant programs out of that account. But I think water recreation account, Deputy Commissioner and I were speaking about this, maybe the bit more appropriate term rather than just the unrefunded gas tax allocation and the motorboat registration fee. I think that includes everything in the water rec account except for surcharges. So, but maybe you want to substitute the word water rec account. But we're looking for other sources too. We're not here to steal money from Peter to pay Paul. We would rather establish the need or define the needs that are out there and then bring back funding options, new revenue to the legislature next year.
Deputy Commissioner, identifying it as the water rec account rather than the way it's currently worded, is that meet broaden it like you were asking, or is that still not?
Well, Mr. Chair, this is the water account. I mean, that's that's where the money is from, the water
rec. This is a portion of, I understand this is a portion of the water rec account.
The only one that's not in here is the surcharge fee on boats.
I don't know.
I mean, it's the same, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to point out to you license fees, registration fees, surcharge on boat registrations, and unrefunded gas tax makes up the water rec account. The grant program and looking to develop one is something that I believe we should be looking towards and working to develop. I'm just pointing out the way the amendment's drafted currently, it is a deviation from where those dollars are going today. And to as this, if the committee is looking to do this and wants us to study this, which I think you do, we may want to look between here and the next committee refining this language.
Representative Kahn.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Well, first of all, I didn't see in the original language, unless you make it the water replicant, I don't see how you're hitting my kayak. We're just looking at motorboat registration fees. I don't know that you keep those separately. There are a whole bunch of kayaks, canoes, and sailboats.
They all go into the water, Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, you're right. They go into the water rec account.
But not, they're not, that's broader than motorboat registration fees. So I think that the water rec, what is the balance in that account right now? What's the fund balance in the water rec account? Which I would assume would be after this biennium's appropriations.
Mr. Chair, under current expectations of expenditures and revenues, that would be a balance in 06 of 3.2 million.
And?
Representative Kahn.
So that's after the appropriate. And how big is the account to begin with?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, total expenditures for fiscal year 05 is $14.2
million. Oh. Mr. Chairman, I'd ask you to do the, since you get the big bucks, Deputy Commissioner, you can do the arithmetic instead of me. But when we're looking at what the balance that we need for the state is the budget reserve and the percentage of this balance for a fund, we're looking at, I'll do this one, that's simple, that's 30%. We're looking at 30% of the fund as a carry-forward balance. I think that there aren't strains on that fund, and I think that the strains to ask that we look at this fund for this amount as opposed to the general fund, whose balance is only the budget surplus. You can do that arithmetic on, tell me how much that is. It's a lot. It's a lot smaller than 30%, I know. So I think that the language, I would suggest, just because I don't like ever voting for the use of some money that I'm not going to pay, I would suggest changing that to the motorboat unrefunded gas tax allocation and motorboat registration fees to make it from the water rec account, which is really with that, which is, I don't know how they'd separate out the stuff anyways. And then I'd also like to ask the current programs, I'd like to ask the language, including proper chemical treatment to protect the lake's environment. I'd like to add that language.
Okay. Representative Engelson? He has a couple of suggestions with regard to language, and I don't know if there's any of those you find acceptable or not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hate to make a lot of changes here, on the last day. I don't know, maybe if we should pull this one over for a few minutes here and see what we can work out on the side and come back.
Okay, we'll hold Amendment 117 aside, see if we can get that adjusted. We'll go to... Representative Kahn, you have an amendment. Can we go to that? JH 118.
Yes.
It's the LCMR. Representative Kahn moves the JH 118 amendment. Representative Kahn.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, this is something which might only just open a door that we've never used, but as we're more concerned about water impairment, I think it should. Going back to, I probably need more information and more materials in front of me to explain this, but in the Constitution, when we adopted the Environmental Trust Fund, we're allowed to use 5%, after the fund reaches a certain level, which it has, we're allowed to use 5% of the principal for loans for water system improvement. And then that's what the Constitution has. So we work within this. We've never done this. And we discussed doing it in LCMR, and we decided, there's such a huge problem out there, and there's so little money, we couldn't add this to what we're doing at this time. But the amount that's available, the total amount in the Environmental Trust Fund, and this is, we just, is taking 5% of it, would give us about $16 million to put into this. We don't get to use the interest, so we cut it back, so it's somewhat under six. It would be under $16 million. We can change what we can use it for in the statute. We can't change the Constitution, but we can define in the statute what water system improvement means. And so I think we ought to be looking at everything. And these are not what happened. Then you go look at what the existing language is. Now, when this language was written, the market rate was extremely high. So it gave us this, so one of the things I want to do is add the possibility to do grants for individuals on the grounds that you might improve a lake quality a lot by individual actions rather than a local unit of government doing the action. And apparently, if you go through the computation with interest rates, what they are now, from 12 to 15, go through the computation on lines 12 to 15, you get a negative interest rate, which doesn't make a lot of sense. So just talking about an interest-free loan makes a little bit more sense than paying people to take out a loan. And this is not, no one says that we're going to do it. It gives another tool for LCMR to work with the public utilities, whatever it is. What's John, what's the group that would handle the program?
Public Facilities Authority.
Public Facilities Authority. And, you know, when we're looking at what we're trying to put into cleaning up waters, the ability to start a program that might make it attractive for people to do innovative things with water systems, I think ought to be something that we put out there. And as I said, it doesn't require us to do something. It just cleans up. It just adds more possibilities of using the language which we've already put in the Constitution.
Can I ask her some questions about this? I see what you're doing about individual sewage treatment systems, but it seems to me that one of the things that we ought to be working on and encouraging is very small cluster systems. And it seems to me that that is not included in your individual sewage treatment system language. So you have the huge, saying not the huge municipal water pollution control systems. But I'm not sure it's always in our best interest just to encourage individual sewage treatment systems when if four neighbors got together, we all might be better off.
Okay. I think it's okay because they'd have to get together and then they'd each, could each get one. We wanted to go more than local units of government, and this exclusion for municipal water pollution control systems is because that exclusion's in the Constitution. So we have to make sure that we're not interfering with
individual
the constitutional
systems. I think you're limiting.
I would be happy to have any language that would, that would do that. I think it's just the purpose of this is really just to put that piece of money out into the. And one of the things that right now, and we were talking, waters is one of the big things that we're doing in the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Resources. But the money that we can expend in that there is only the interest on this fund. And it was definitely, in the days that we passed the original constitutional amendment, it was thought that as the fund got over a certain level, it might be nice to put this tool out as, to put this tool out as a revolving loan fund and to make it attractive. And I think the idea of having a zero interest loan fund and see if there are any projects that come in like this is a good idea. And it never, as I said, it doesn't give any grants. It doesn't require any anything to be done. It takes, when you think, if we leave that money in the trust fund and we get to use the principal, we get to use only whatever the interest, I always do things by 10 because the arithmetic is easier. But if we only get to use 10% of it, we only get to use the interest off it. And, I thought about this when we were dealing with Representative Mark Olson's bill on the trying to encourage, new innovative stuff from individuals. So, anyway. I think it has no fiscal effect. There's no fiscal effect on the bill, and it really doesn't. It has no fiscal effect even on the LCMR granting for this year.
As you have a draft, it appears to me it's a permissive language that just expands authority or ability to the LCMR. Any questions on Representative Hopkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am not one to beat a dead horse, and ordinarily I would let this go, but Representative Kahn, because it's your amendment, line 12, I don't know what you're trying to pull on us, but it shall.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me. At one point, when I really learned this issue at the beginning, I went through everything that came before me, and I changed every shall I saw to a must. And the reviser suggested that it would really be better to do that as a total picture. So the only reason I picked on Representative McNamara was that it was a new word. And I would go back to doing that, you know, if you want to. But, when you start to go through every piece of the, and we once did, we in government operations, I think the campaign finance statute is perfectly written because we were recodifying it and we had the whole chapter in front of us and we just did the whole thing. And I think that's the one. It was one chapter anyway. So there's one chapter in the statutes that's okay. But I'd hesitate. You know, we should fix them up as we see them. And I thought you'd see the one in Representative Dill's amendment, and I was looking at that one and just thought, oh well, that's.
I saw that. I saw the one in Representative Tingelstedt.
Yeah.
I let those go, but sorry,
I know.
I had to bring it up.
You're wrong. Lake Association.
See, Representative Hoppe, and you didn't think she was restrained.
Okay.
Has her limits.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
Representative Wagini is talking about what she says. Encouraging groups of it. Cluster groups and so forth. She'd like to add, so I'd like to just incorporate this into the amendment.
Just for the septic system or for everything?
Everything is to write in, or after individuals, wherever we say individuals, add or groups of individuals.
Where are you located? Page one?
Yeah, that's page one on line 10, and also page.
Page one and line 10.
We don't need it.
Okay.
We don't need it.
We got
somebody
it.
Told.
Somebody smarter.
Forget
than
it.
Okay, that's taken care of. Representative Kahn does not incorporate. Any other questions on this amendment, JH118? Any testimony, people, comments from the audience on this? I don't know, because this is kind of a new concept we haven't talked about in committee at all. At least not to this level of detail. I think Representative Kahn has mentioned it a couple of times. The motion reoccurs on JH118. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The Representative Ackbarth, we're ready to go back to your 1202 amendment.
1202.
Representative Hackbarth moves amendment 1202. Hackbarth.
Mr. Chairman, we've got some changes to a number of amendments here. Should I have Mr. Helland address the amendment, or do you want me to mention what the changes are?
Go ahead and mention it.
Okay.
Handle it. Doesn't look too extensive here.
Mr. Chairman, what we're the only real change is on line 7, delete state lands and insert forestry administrated lands in state forests.
Say that again.
Mr. Chair, I think it's forestry administered lands.
What did I say?
Administrative.
No, forestry administered, yes. That's correct. I'm sorry, I misspoke.
So on line 7, we're deleting state lands and inserting forestry administered lands in state forest.
Correct, Mr. Chairman. Okay.
Members have that change.
In or am?
In.
In.
Okay, any questions on the amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Amendment 1202 as it has been changed or...
Mr. Chairman, this was an amendment brought forward by, specifically Roger Houck. I think a lot of folks know Roger. And he has some land that's kind of landlocked. He has to cross over some state forest lands to get to his place. And I know there's a number of folks that have to do that. They've been riding ATVs in there for a long time. And he just wants to be able to get a permit to get back in there. And this takes care of that. And this is some language that they worked out with the DNR.
And Representative Hackbarth, for those who may not be familiar with his activities, I believe he works with handicapped people and
Capable Partners, Mr. Chairman.
What's the name of the program?
Capable Partners.
Capable Partners. Takes them hunting. Having this type of flexibility, giving back the property that he's utilized for services and needs ATV connection. It's permissive language, so it doesn't mandate the commissioner to do anything. It just allows for it. Is there any questions on the amendment? Okay, the motion occurs on Amendment 1202, as Representative Hackrath has changed it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Representative Hackberth, we have another amendment, 1216.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment 1216 is an amendment to a bill, actually, Senator Sams had me throw in the hopper. This is quite different from the original bill that we put in. A couple of years ago, we said that we weren't going to renew commercial turtle licenses. And this just says that we are going to continue on with selling commercial turtle licenses, but it's only going to be limited to the amount of turtle licenses that we sell in 2004. And maybe the DNR wants to correct me, but I think it's only in the area of somewhere of 45 licenses that in 2004 that we're selling. So the original bill was to limit it and cap it at 100 licenses a year. This just limits it to the amount of turtle licenses that we're currently selling. And if somebody's continually buying a turtle license year after year after year, they get first preference in these turtle licenses. But if they drop off, they don't want to continue buying turtle licenses anymore, then we can resell that license to someone else. That's basically what the amendment is.
Okay. Any questions on the amendment? Representative McGinnis.
Yes, has DNR updated us all, Representative Hackbarth, on the sustainability of our turtle population? And how, because that was the issue back when we were dealing with turtle licenses. And have they, I don't believe we've had any testimony here. Have you had any private information about, is what we are doing currently sustainable?
Ms. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, I have not had that conversation with the department. As you know, Larry Howes is usually the turtle guy in the legislature. He carries the turtle legislation. I did talk to Representative Howes, and he thought this was a good thing to do, but I didn't get any of that specific information from him, and I have not talked to the DNR. I'm sure that the DNR is probably not in favor of this amendment. I think they're the ones that wanted to discontinue selling licenses, but I have not had that conversation, though.
Well, if Mr. Chairman, if DNR is probably not in favor of this, then perhaps we need to ask DNR two questions: why they're not in favor, and is what's going on sustainable?
Okay. We have someone from DNR.
Welcome, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Lee Famuler with the Department of Natural Resources. I have a handout that's going around that we prepared when this bill came up in the Senate as well last week. And the handout is just a brief summary of why we are concerned about the legislation. Wait just a couple minutes for it to go around, but we did work very hard a couple years ago to... there are a number of bills, and those of you around remember we had for a couple years a lot of debate about commercial turtle harvest. And the bill that was passed in 2002, the compromise was rather than to put an end to commercial harvest, to phase it out. And we phased it out by, after August 2002, not allowing any more new commercial turtle licenses to be issued. So it would gradually allow a phase out of those who currently do commercial turtle harvest. And after that bill was passed 2 years ago, we worked for the last 2 years working on rulemaking, which basically used that phase out as the foundation for the rulemaking we did, and then did a number of other tweaks to the rules that really affected commercial turtle harvest. I mean, if you look at the handout just briefly, the overwhelming body of literature says that commercial turtle harvest is not sustainable in the northern latitudes. The world market is growing for turtles, and there's many states in the Midwest that have brought a complete closure to commercial turtle harvest. We've worked really closely in a very open public process with the commercial turtle harvesters in the last 3 to 4 years to, and have provided them a lot of the things that they really asked for. But the foundation of what our whole rulemaking process has been the last 2 years is that we were gradually going to phase out commercial turtle harvest.
Representative Guinness.
And if I could, and essentially this bill allows new people to come in and turtle harvest when old people retire, if that's, I'm getting the bill correctly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Guinness, that's correct.
So this is, we would change and say no longer phase out. And if you could help us a little bit on states around us, if they are saying no turtle harvest and there is a demand out there that outstrips supply, then doesn't that put additional pressure on Minnesota because we were the only ones giving new licenses?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guinness, that has been one of our concerns. We haven't seen it in the past year. Most of the other states that have closed out commercial harvest have done it very recently, so we haven't seen a dramatic increase, immediate response to that. But that has been one of our long-term concerns.
Could I have one more question?
I
don't know whether you listed it in here, but can you tell us what states have phased out?
Mr. Chair, Representative Guinness, it's on the third bullet at the top.
Okay.
Closure of commercial harvest in Wisconsin in 1999, Nebraska in 2001. Iowa does still, and Michigan do still allow it, but only for snapping turtles. And in Minnesota, where we're seeing the greatest increase, is we have three turtles that we allow commercial harvest on: the spiny softshell, the snapping, and the western painted. And where we see the greatest increase in world markets and in Minnesota is in western painted turtles.
Other questions? Director Fanmuller, I'm wondering, do you control this species similar, Director Fanmuller? Do you control this species similar to how we control other species in the state of Minnesota with regard to harvesting? I mean, do you put limits on how many turtles can be taken by a license holder and over what period of time or daily, monthly, yearly? But how do you do that? Or don't you?
Mr. Chair, that has been part of the rulemaking that we've undergone in the last 2 years. There is no limit on the number of turtles that can be taken. There's no limit on the number of traps for western painted turtles, where the most of the harvest is. There is a limit on the number of traps, submerged traps, which are used for the soft shells and the snapping turtles, but there's no limit on the number of traps for the western painted turtles. The only limit is a size limit. And there is a season for that's closed for both snapping turtles and spiny softshells, which is about a 6-week period when most breeding is occurring. But there's no harvest limit in terms of numbers.
And Director Fenn, why don't we have limits? If we manage our other species by putting limits on them, we don't even regulate the number of licenses. Here we're regulating the number of licenses, but that's a very different approach than we're using for other activities. Why the difference?
Mr. Chairman, that's a good question. And I think the best way to respond is that we've been investing millions of dollars for decades to collect harvest information on populations of white-tailed deer, ruffed grouse, walleye, etc. We've not had the resources and have not been able to make that sort of investment for turtles. The dollars have not been there. And we just don't have the history.
When we're county biological surveys don't take that, get that information?
Mr. Chairman, the survey information that we do with dollars that are not game and fish dollars are really targeted to rare species, much rarer than the western painted turtle and the snapping turtle. We collect some incidental information, but we simply do not have good statewide population numbers for the three species that are commercially harvested.
Dr. Fanmuller, but if we don't properly manage the turtles, they could become rare.
Mr. Chairman, you're absolutely correct.
It seems to me that maybe we need to take a new approach on how we're managing that particular species. rather than just eliminating all harvesting, but really actually managing the harvest.
Mr. Chairman, part of what we've done during the last 2 years of rulemaking is to, the new piece that we have is the size limit, which is our vehicle without good statewide population information to put some management on the harvest. And what we're trying to do is protect the breeding population.
Members, I think that I'd like to continue with that kind of thought in our during the interim of how we can really be looking at this and dealing with this in maybe a different light and finding some dollars to get us some baseline activities, because it looks to me like we're handling this very differently than what we did. We have, even if you stick with the current practice of just the people that are have a license can continue to have that license for a lifetime, but we have no limit on how many turtles they take. I mean, that really isn't managing the harvest. It's not doing it, or managing the species. It's kind of leaving it wide open to whatever they, how many hours they need to sleep. If they don't need to sleep very much, they can harvest more. So it just doesn't seem to me to be a good process. I'd like to improve that. But meanwhile, what we're really focusing on, I believe, here, Representative Hackbarth, is you're limiting the number of licenses. That's what the focus is on. You could save me some time in the future, should this be successful, if we would, on line 11 and on line 15, change the shells to must. Probably save me some time on the floor.
Mr. Chairman.
If you'd just incorporate that.
I would, Mr. Chair.
So on lines 12 and on line 15, the shell will be changed to must.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's not good enough.
All right, did I miss one?
Well, Mr. Chairman, right now, we're not going to give any new turtle sellers licenses. And so this means that we'll give more licenses. We'll give additional ones. Does that include renewals, or are people allowed to renew them?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, people are allowed to renew them, but they must have currently have a turtle seller's license.
Well, Mr. Chairman, so taking this amendment on will allow more licenses to be issued than current law would. And I don't, yes, I think so.
I believe I'm reading the language that it must not issue more turtle licenses in any year than the number of licenses issued for the 2004 license year.
Yes, so, but Mr. Chairman, if someone gives up a license, then that can go to someone else. The current language is more protective of turtles than the new language, or more protective of at least the licenses. It doesn't.
Representative Poppe.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kahn, I think the way that it is that, you know, if I want to go start harvesting and trapping turtles, I can't do it because I,
you know, really
it's
don't
long.
Want to do that.
Well, they are tasty, but it's only if you've had a license before. So all we're doing is, I mean, if somebody currently has a license, the way I read this, and somebody gives one up, the only person that can take that now open license is somebody else that currently had a license. And
No, they get preference, but they're not.
Somebody else new can come in.
Someone else new can come in.
Isn't that the intent?
No. Well,
it's the intent of the amendment.
The intent of the amendment, right?
Right.
This is the amendment is more anti-turtle than the existing language. If you want to protect turtles, you have to vote against the amendment. But it's not very much more. It allows. Because it allows every turtle seller to keep their renewal. It doesn't allow new people to enter the field, which seems to me is a good idea from looking at what DNR's rule protection, you know, of what they're doing.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Genius.
Yes. Given your position, Mr. Chairman, that we don't manage our turtle harvest at this point, to make sure it's sustainable, that it seems that the Hackbarth amendment is premature and should not even be considered until we know that we have a sustainable population. So
I would hope, Representative Hackworth, that you'd withdraw this amendment, and if at a time when we understand whether we have sustainability like we do in Deer, then we could reconsider this kind of amendment. But since we don't have that, we don't know about sustainability, we should wait. And I would hope that we could put off this conversation until we know that what we're doing is sustainable. And, I mean, the chair is right. We are treating turtles differently. But we weren't able to appropriate the money. And until we can do that and know what we're doing, I would hope you would withdraw this and we wait until that time.
Representative Hackworth, I'd have a little different advice in that I think that we have been focusing too much on the people coming forward with concerns about being able to continue to harvest turtles in the state of Minnesota. And I'd just like to stabilize that number of licenses and lock it up. And let's really get some discussion going on what is appropriate harvest for the species, regardless of the number of licenses. And so, to me, it's the license holders, not the problem. It's how many turtles they're capturing is the problem. And I'd like to get that discussion switched over and get us off of this problem of people trying to protect their turf by focusing on being able to retain their license and to be able to pass it on to future generations and all the other issues that we keep getting bogged down with, and really get on to the real issue of managing the turtles in the state of Minnesota for a sustainable future. Representative Conner.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I completely agree with you, except that the, I don't think a turtle seller's license is issued to an individual, isn't it? So that they can't pass it on. So I think, and we passed this. We decided we were going to not have any more new licenses, any new licenses after August 1st, 2002, which was 2 years ago, year and a half ago. And so this is loosening up on the numbers of people, and I can't see how that doesn't loosen up on the protection that we're giving to turtles. I agree with that you want, but I don't, and I think we should do it, but I don't think we should pass this amendment. Amendment is not good for turtles.
Representative Conner, because I've sat through these discussions in years past, and we always seem to focus on the number of licenses, and people perceive that because we're no longer going to issue licenses to someone that doesn't currently hold one, that if we just wait long enough, the harvest will go down to zero. And that's not the way to manage the species. I believe that because if we could have some very aggressive harvesters out there that could be taking significant advantage of having a license in their pocket, and we're not managing the species. I'd like to get us away from the license issue and get us towards managing the species. And if people know there will be licenses around in the future, there's not just time duration is going to solve this, but the licenses are going to be there. So let's get the investment into managing the species. That's how we'll help to resolve this for the longest possible term. Otherwise, we end up down a situation, which this is going to be growing into, is okay, if we don't have 45 licenses, let's go ahead and see if we can't maybe transfer this to the next of kin. And you know, are you going to do it the first generation or second generation? We're right back into the same situation we've been in before. I want to get us off of that dime and get us to say, okay, with 45 licenses, I don't know if that's good or bad. We'll find out as we actually start to manage the species, how many licenses, and then how many turtles of different species can they actually harvest and have it sustained in the state of Minnesota.
Well,
Representative Conner.
Again, Mr. Chairman, I completely agree with you, and I would support this if it were part of a comprehensive turtle protection bill. But as this is, all this does is add new people who, when we come up with a comprehensive turtle protection bill, will want to be protected. And so this, the existing, and remember, so I would, if we were doing comprehensive turtle protection, I completely agree with you that this language might be reasonable. But since we're not doing this, I don't see, and we have decided before that we weren't going to do any new turtle languages, I don't see how loosening this up when we know that there is a problem. We don't know the extent of the problem. We know when we read this that there's an increasing problem. I see this amendment as being very bad for the turtle, and I would hope that Representative Hackbarth would remove it. If he's not, I'm going to ask for another roll call vote.
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could ask Ms. Van Mueller, could you give us a little bit of history of what's happened with the licenses in the last 5 years or so? I mean, have we been up to over 100 licenses that we're issuing? How many licenses have we been issuing over the last few years? And I think where I'm trying to go with this, Mr. Chairman and members, is that this has really decreased the number. The legislation that we passed has decreased the amount of licenses that we've been issuing. And are we correct in saying that it's about 45 licenses at this point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hackbarth, I've got the history back to 1998. In 1998, we did have 114 licenses. It's gone down over the years. In 2002, which was prior to the legislation being passed, we had 58 licenses. In 2003, we had 51, which is the first year after the legislation was passed. 51 that were commercial turtle licenses. We also provided for two new licenses. This was part of the issue that we worked out with the turtle harvesters. We had 9 apprentice licenses, which are people who help the turtle harvesters, and then we had just this past year a new license called recreational license, because a good number of the people who previously had licenses really weren't in it for the money. They wanted to be able to use commercial equipment to collect snapping turtles for food for them, for their own family, and we provided that at a much reduced license cost, and we've got about 11, 12 recreational turtle license out there now.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chairman, I think when we're talking about protecting the turtles or talking about the amount of licenses that are out there, we're kind of moving in that direction, and I don't want to see this turtle harvesting go away altogether, because we do need some management of the turtles that are out there. I can tell you, I've been on lakes many different places where you just see these turtles all over the shoreline, and you can't put your fish over the edge of the boat if you want to go in and have a little something to eat and come back. Your fish will be gone if you don't have a live well. So there is still some problems out there with some of these turtles. I don't want to see this go away. I think we need a management tool out there to, and I think this commercial turtle harvesting takes care of that. And I think if we cap this at like 45 licenses, this is a good place to be rather than getting rid of it altogether. So, no, I'm not going to withdraw the amendment, and I would hope that people would support the amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, I don't know the exact protocol here, because Ms. Famuller, you mentioned a couple things. In rule, you could be limiting the number of traps and or the number of turtles taken by the commercial trappers, and you used to do that, and for some reason you quit doing that?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, we have never limited the harvest. We just went through a very prolonged 2-year rulemaking process with a lot of compromises back and forth between the commercial harvesters and the department and many other stakeholders. We had over 60 different stakeholders who were involved in the turtle making rulemaking process the last 2 years. What came out of that was no limit on the number of traps used for painted turtles and a size limit for painted turtles, and those were not in the rules previously. So those are new restrictions placed in these last 2 years, and the rules just went into effect literally weeks ago.
Mr. Chair, my concern is the snapping turtles, the traps for the snapping turtles. No regulation, no limit on the people doing that, because I thought years ago there used to be a limit on the commercial trappers of that and the number of traps.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, with respect to snapping turtles, the primary equipment used for those are submerged traps, and the rule does have a limit of 40 submerged traps for snapping turtles and also a size limit. You can't take turtles under 12 inches for snapping turtles. But a good portion, as I mentioned just previously, a number of people just use commercial equipment for their personal use, and that's why the recreational turtle license was established.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Van Mueller, in your handout about Senate File 2940, your first bullet point is the abandonment of the 40 trap limit in 1976.
And that, Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, that's probably a little confusing. That was specifically for floating traps, not for submerged traps. What happened in the recent rulemaking process was kind of a a distinction between floating traps and submerged traps. So we currently have a limit on the number of submerged traps, which is 40, and that's specifically targeting primarily the snapping turtles, but there's no limit on the floating traps. So my apologies if that's confusing.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if we can incorporate some kind of an oral amendment in here to encourage the DNR to do exactly what you're talking about. I just am totally perplexed that we have no direction we're giving to the number of snapping turtles. We don't have any clue. So we're just going to say we're going to eliminate it? We don't know how many white-tailed deer we are, so if you didn't get a license last year, you don't get one next year. I just think the idea here is we should be giving some direction to the department to say, come back to us. We want to know if we got X number of snappers. What do we need to do? But in the meantime, just I think you hit the nail on the head. Well, we don't know, so let's just eliminate everybody that's ever done it. And then maybe if the last guy's 12 years old and he only lives to be 90 whatever, then we'll be done in 78 years. Well, the snappers might be gone in 28 years. I think, Mr. Representative Hackbart, I'm wondering if we have some direction to move this along.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I think I would love to work with the department on getting some language like that together. I don't think this committee is ready to do that right now, but after we leave this committee, if we could put this in the bill and we could work on that legislation to come up with some kind of a language to tack on here to take care of those concerns and give them some direction, I'd like to do that. But I think to come up with the right language right here, right now, might not be the right place. But I'm willing to put that on here if we can come up with that language in the next committee or in conference committee or whatever the case may be.
Representative Kennis, you had asked.
Pass.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, my first of all, again, reading this bullet point, the fourth one down, and how has DNR worked with the public? The fourth one is the DNR continued administrative rulemaking with the understanding that the phase-out is a needed and reasonable strategy for turtle conservation in Minnesota. And I guess I'd like to ask Ms. Fanmuller, does the department support the language in AO4?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, we do not.
We do not. Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, I really support the direction that you've suggested, but I don't think we enhance that direction by having more people out trapping turtles. I'm still going to keep my motion for a roll call vote on this amendment, and I really think you should work with Mr. Hackbarth to find some reasonable language that would do what you want to do later.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Wiginius.
Okay. One of my other concerns here is DNR has just been through a rulemaking process that is always expensive and time-consuming, and obviously done with the industry, and it seems that all the compromise was made. Now to come back and say we want to spend more money on rulemaking rather bothers me. I think we ought to be doing it on stream protection rather than rulemaking. Now, the other thing to do if we're going to do something is, if you're going to put something in statute, we ought to put the limits right in statute and not put in statute more rulemaking or sending it back to DNR for more rulemaking, since they did rulemaking with the best of intents because they did what the legislature said. They came up with a strategy that had been agreed with by the industry, and now to go back and redo rulemaking seems to me to be a lot of money down the tube.
You had a question?
Jeff. No, it's a statement. I think I'm a little more fiscally conservative. That was my fiscal conservative statement.
The other questions we have on Representative Hackbarth's amendment.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Kahn. Again, following up on Representative Wiginius about the administrative rulemaking, you know, which has gone on for 2 years, that was done with the understanding that phase-out was part of the process. So you now go, after having done that rulemaking, you now say, okay, well, we're not going to do the phase-out. That's, you know, that means that it's not clear what the worth of that rulemaking is.
Representative Kahn, I understand you're not wanting to get rid of the phase-out before we actually do anything. And my feeling, though, is that the phase-out has really given some people comfort that they're not going to resolve this problem. And it's kind of stayed in status quo. And I would like to move this issue along. And I think to do that is to really put it right back on the table. As we are going to have licenses in the state of Minnesota, time is not the answer, and that management of the species is, and that we need to put pressure on that issue. And I think that while Representative Hackbarth has indicated he'll continue to work and see what kind of language he can come up with, I think that this is, for right now, this keeps the issue alive and does put it into a forum where we can continue to talk about it. If we don't pass it out here today, it's not an issue that we can continue with for this year.
Well, Mr. Chairman, again, three times they say here that the phase-out provision is a critical piece of the turtle conservation puzzle. You know, if you want to keep it, if you want to keep it in, just eliminate all turtle sellers' licenses, and that'll keep us before. So this is just going in the wrong direction. If you feel comfortable voting for this going in the wrong direction, then just do it. I know turtles aren't, they're not what's called charismatic mega vertebrates like deer and white bear, and they're not even cuddly. So, but you know, there are those of us, they have their fans. So,
that's what
I'm coming down. I'm coming down in favor of the turtles with my vote on this, okay. And in favor of the department's process and their
and
what the previous legislature has done. So,
okay, as normal, little turtles cause a little problem. I think we're all working hard towards the same objective, but I don't think the phase-out is a critical part of the solution. I think it's actually prevented us from getting to a reasonable solution because it's put some people into a comfort zone that gives them a false sense of success, and I think that's not where we want to be.
Just last comments. Just, you know, and I don't know how much you've worked on this, but the people from DNR who have worked on it over the past 3 years say that the phase-out is a critical part of the problem, and I guess I prefer to go with their judgment at this time, although I really like the things that you added and said that we ought to be looking at.
Representative Cornish?
Sure, members. I'm going to vote for the Hackbarth Amendment, but I think we just got to be ready to back up the DNR. So if they start to get hacked by these people they made the agreements with, the stakeholder groups are going to get kind of upset because they thought they had an agreement. And so if we can stick behind the DNR and tell us the direction that we're giving the DNR, and that's why they're coming back to them again when they have to. So that's my only concern. But I'm going to vote for the amendment.
Any other comments, questions? Okay, the motion occurs on Amendment 1216. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Osmond?
Aye.
Representative Cornish?
Aye.
Representative Dill? Representative Hackbarth?
Aye.
Representative Hoppe?
Aye.
Representative Kahn?
No.
Representative Conan?
Aye.
Representative Lindgren?
Aye.
Representative McNamara?
Aye.
Representative Pennis?
Yes.
Representative Tingelstad?
Aye.
Representative Wagenius? And Representative Wozluk?
No.
Nine yes, three no. The motion prevails. Representative Hackbarth, we have another amendment, 1231.
1231, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do have to make some changes to this amendment. There were some drafting difficulties here. On line 19, delete motor vehicle recyclers. Just delete that. And on line 21, delete motor vehicle recycler. And instead of that language, insert the word person.
Okay, Representative Hackbarth incorporates those changes in his amendment. Representative Hackbarth moves Amendment 1231.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is some of the language that was in Representative Cox's bill that we moved on earlier. It's a little bit different, though. This strictly puts the mandate in place, and it also, in current law, it is a misdemeanor on a first offense, and we're going to reduce that to a petty misdemeanor for first offense and then keep in place for any subsequent offense misdemeanor for not removing the mercury switches. Okay.
Representative Wagenius.
I guess, Representative Hackbarth, does the agency dealing with this have the authority to do administrative penalty orders with regard to persons who remove switches?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, I don't know if OEA has an administrative penalty order or not. I know there's a number of departments within state government that do. I'm not sure if OEA does or not. I know the DNR doesn't have any of that right now, but I was carrying that bill. Didn't go anywhere.
The in current law, the penalty for a violation here is a misdemeanor.
Correct.
And so that's we're actually establishing a petty misdemeanor level for that, as I understand it. But Mr. Benke may be able to answer Representative Wagenius's question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave Benke with the Office of Environmental Assistance. The OEA does not have administrative penalty order authority to answer your question, Representative Wagenius. But as Representative Osmond indicated, the general authority under the PCA for penalties of this sort, what he had indicated.
I suppose the question would be, does the MPCA have APO authority? Someone from PCA?
Mr. Chairman, Nelson French, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Yes, we do have APO authorities at the agency.
Representative Genius.
And Mr. French, could APO authority govern the removal of switches if we desire to do that, or does it now, or is it just criminal?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Genius, I do not know the answer to that, and we can get back to you later today on that.
Representative Genius.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hackbarth, I like the language that we take away good faith effort to remove. But
that was your language, Representative Wagenius.
I know that was years ago when we first started on mercury. And what I wanted to say, though, is criminalizing people who are working in the recycling industry does not seem to make the most sense to me. Using the criminal system is hard in the first place, and APOs make folks restore to where they were before. And it seems to me that that would be a much more effective penalty to say that. And that's the question I would have for the agency. Could we put this under the agency so that we could use APOs, and which I think are a far more effective tool for doing what you want to do, rather than making folks who are just the guy on the line, making them a criminal? I just don't. And besides which, this would take this to civil law, which you probably don't want to do. So the direction I would suggest we go in is making sure that we could use APO instead of criminal and using language remove.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, current law is that this would be a misdemeanor. We're reducing this now to a petty misdemeanor for first offense, and any subsequent offense would be remain current law, which would be a misdemeanor.
I understand that, Representative Hackforth. Nobody has been penalized under this. It's ineffective. And if you want to be effective, APOs are far more effective. If you don't want to be effective, then a petty misdemeanor is like nothing. So why bother?
Representative Wagenius, do you have some language that you'd like to explore? Because right now, if we take out the entire lines that you're concerned about, and we put in on line 17, removed, by deleting, making that a stiffer effort, which I assume you support.
Yes, I do.
That automatically makes it a misdemeanor. There's nothing we can do there without us making any other action. It makes it a misdemeanor. So what I'm saying is, if we want to tighten up on the removal of mercury switches, which I believe we all do, then we thought, because it does switch it all the way to a misdemeanor, it would be maybe a positive move to have a petty misdemeanor for the first offense to not criminalize people as quickly. If you have another suggestion on how to deal with that, we'd certainly be able to deal with it. But pointing out the problem is the easy part. We need to find a solution.
Mr. Chairman, if you look, we're working with Chapter 116. And in Chapter 116, under administrative penalties, it looks like the commissioner has that authority to use administrative penalty order to handle this issue. So,
then, if I could, Mr. Chairman, I would just repeal the misdemeanor, and that with the understanding, I believe, that the administrative penalty orders would govern. But I would want to hear the department say, yes, we will use the administrative penalty order instead of the criminal system.
The department, how do you use the APOs? Because usually you have both available to you, both a criminal penalty and an APO. I don't think it's one or the other.
Exactly.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. And we do have APO authority over this, and we would intend to use it in this area.
Then I don't care.
Thank you.
Very That's good. The key.
Because what we're, by establishing this language of petty misdemeanor, just means that even when the department does try to use it as a criminal offense, for the first offense, it's a petty misdemeanor. We're just trying to not keep people from doing their, because they made a mistake. We don't want it to be really hammered bad. But we do want to get this taken care of. We want to get mercury switches out of our environment.
The better way to do it, I think, is administrative penalty orders.
Yep. And they can do that.
Okay. Then we're fine.
Very good.
Renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Hackbarth renews his motion on Amendment 1231 as he has changed it. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay, we have Representative Tinglestead. We have an amendment. Your amendment, 120?
Yes, it's just coming around, Mr. Chair.
Okay. It was 118. I believe you now have changed it.
117 was the previous amendment.
117? Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, I've been working with Mr. Botzik and the department and Representative Kahn over the last half hour or so, and we think this is compromise language that we can move out of this committee. And I took a few minutes there and just corrected a couple of typos, so I'd like that incorporated in the amendment. On line 6 there, to add the words for lake management after the word programs. And then on line 10, a typo there, strike reviser and insert review.
Okay. Representative Tinglestead moves the JH120 amendment with the changes on line 6 after programs, insert for lake management. And on line 10, strike reviser and insert review. Representative Tinklestad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I appreciate your patience on this amendment today. We think that this more closely addresses the issues that we're looking at as far as the aquatic plant management and lake protection programs, and to just look at some of the current things in place and come back to us next session with some ideas for grant programs so that these various local governments and qualified lake organizations can be looking at helping to improve some of our lake areas.
Representative Cornyn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tingle said, the thing that concerns me about this is out of this this fund right now, there's about three different things that come out of there for COs. And there's no guarantee that we're going to have more money into this. And if we make another program to take some money out, it's suspect that naturally it's going to mean a reduction to the people. I think that we get equipment out of that, we get overtime money out of that, and I think they're using some money for the sheriffs to enforce locally come out of that, if I'm not mistaken, out of that fund. So if more funding comes out of this, is it going to make a shortage for the others? And is there any guarantee that there's going to be more money in there if we could get an answer?
Representative Cornish, I don't think there's any guarantees on anything around here, but there's... We did have some testimony earlier with regard to the fund balance, and I believe they said that there is a $3.4 million in the fund balance right now with the rest of the programs taken care of. It started out with $14 million, and it's down to $3 million. That's the carryover, as I recall.
Yes.
Isn't there, is that not? Am I correct in that?
So,
the department's indicating that's correct.
In your opinion, then, are the committees this affordable and it's not going to short?
There's Deputy Commissioner, you're probably best to answer that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, again, my name is Mark Holston, Deputy Commissioner of DNR. To Representative Cornish's point, this is just a study. This would be developing recommendations and a variety of funding sources to develop some type of grant program. So you'll ultimately have an opportunity to review anything that we would propose in this arena and be able to accept or deny that.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, Representative Tinklestad renews her motion on Amendment 120. I ask she's changed it. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Okay, is there anything else? Okay. I would like to...
Mr. Chairman, I do have a one-word amendment that I would like for.
Okay.
On page 23 of the bill, for the delete all amendment, the way I read lines 3 to 8, that we are shifting a cost, and this may be inadvertent, so I just want to make sure it's clear. A cost of managing impaired waters to local units of government, because it says public agencies shall identify opportunities to participate in, and on line 7, including the funding or technical assistance needs that would be necessary to take such actions. Well, I think that, and maybe what you meant was funding or technical assistance needs when it says, if any, say instead of that, say, if available, so that we are not mandating that local units of government spend funds or technical assistance to do impaired waters cleanup if they don't have the money. So that's essentially where I'm going. Okay. So it's just the funds instead of if any, but if available.
Okay. Representative Guinness, I believe that's taken care of, but I'd like someone from the department with regard to impaired waters come forward. But it's my understanding that what we're establishing in this process is a Clean Waters Council and the Impaired Waters Coordination that will make recommendations to the legislature. So there is no direct enforcement from this activity to these agencies. In other words, this process cannot actually direct the agencies to do something. They're actually coming back to the legislature with recommendations, and it would be the legislature that then would decide as to what would actually be implemented. And could you verify if I'm correct or not?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Kathy Moger, Chief Financial Officer of the Pollution Control Agency. My understanding, what the G16 discussed is that the Clean Waters Council would provide recommendations to the commissioner, which then could be integrated into our biennial budget proposal. The legislature would also receive those recommendations, so you'd be able to see it from both sides. And then basically it's your decision on how to appropriate the money that would be recommended in the information from the Clean Waters Council.
And Representative McGinnis, it would be the same with other departments or any advice that they'd have on other agencies also, because the concept here of what I believe has been drafted in the intent is that we have we're spending about $289 million on pollution reduction activities in our waters in the state of Minnesota on an annual basis. And this, we know that we need more than that. The testimony was we need about $100 million more per year to really fully address the needs. But we already have $289 million going in that direction. So we want to try and get an organization, this council, to really start to take a look at that and to assist the agencies and departments in their recommendations to the legislature that will be focused on water-impaired issues, so that we can really try to address that federal mandate with our current spending as well as with the additional or new money that would be hopefully will be appropriating in future years. So that's the concept here. They do not have the authority to carry out their activity. They will be, but we are asking them to really take a look at it and give us their best advice on how we can deal with these issues and all of our current spending. Representative Wiggins.
Okay. I think I understand, and I just want to make sure that the language is clear, because the way it says, shall identify opportunities to participate and assist in the successful implementation of the program, including the funding or technical assistance needs, if any, that would be necessary to take such actions. That is a, I worry about our local units of government there. So I would rather say if available rather than if any. So that's your choice, Mr. Chairman, because you are chair.
I will certainly take that under advice and before I'm changing it right at this time, but I'll make certain that we are not in somehow putting in place a mandate, because that is not what they're trying to do here. And I've been assured that that's not going to occur. And so we'll continue to work on the language. And
that is my worry, Mr.
Floor.
Chair.
Yep. We are in agreement on the objective. And we'll get that verified and have the many in the room that are very interested in that issue. It's also our agreement that I've had with the League of Cities and others that we will not be putting in place mandates. But we do want to try and get this mechanism put in place to assist the legislature in making quality decisions in the future with regard to spending. So that's the effort. So we'll verify that. Any other concerns with regard to the amendment? Okay, the amendment 1215, that's A04-1215, the delete everything amendment is before us as amended. Any further questions on that? The motion would be to adopt that amendment. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
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 Motion prevails. The bill is amended. The I'll recommend that House File Number 1867 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Ways and Means Committee as amended. Any further questions? Any testimony from the audience in opposition to this bill? coming forward. Tom, you want to testify in opposition? Okay, hearing none. Motion reoccurs on House File 1867. Be recommended pass. Be referred to Ways and Means as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Thank you very much, members. I think this is our last time that we will be together. This is biennium, unless something comes up that we don't know about. So I want to take an opportunity to thank our staff, Pages. John, thank you very much for all you do. Really appreciate it. Thank you, John. We also have committee administrator Marilyn Brick and Robert Green, our committee assistant. Thank you very much for your help. Thank our partisan staff on both sides of the aisle. We appreciate your help in trying to keep us on the straight and narrow and give us good quality information. And also the person that really has been instrumental in helping us put all of this together and really keeping on line the two individuals that we rely upon the most. And that's Mr. John Helen from House Research. Thank you very much, John. And keeping those numbers straight and the one we have that keeps the most accountability to the chair to keep me on the straight and narrow with regard to numbers is Jim Reinholz. Thank you very much. Thank you, members. We appreciate it very much, and we are adjourned.